Today on the Inside Flap.
She used to be a police officer, and she told me what I needed to do because I can't outline. I don't know how to do it. So she said, what you need is a murder wall, like they do in the police. So I got this giant piece of white paper, and my daughter, who was, you know, younger at the time, she took it out in the backyard, and she splashed all this red paint on it, so it looked like blood spatter.
Oh, so sweet.
And I put it up on the wall, and I tried to do my novel with the stickies. Like, I tried really hard.
And the
like,
strings.
And I can't think of anything.
I was filming.
Oh, that's right.
My very first House Hunters renovation.
Yes.
And I'm an interior designer, and it was a big deal for me. Mm-hmm. And it was really exciting. It was probably day three of filming.
Yes.
And we had a hailstorm that will be written down in the history books. Yeah. And it was, I'm not exaggerating, softball size hail.
Yep.
That came down. It busted through the skylight while we were filming.
Through a skylight.
This is a great episode. DM me if you want to know the name of it.
Bye. There you go.
The Inside Flap is available on demand every week on iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and around the world on theinsideflap.com.
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to our book podcast. Seated across the desk to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And relaxing comfortably, he's got his shoes up on the floral couch, is Andrew Dowd.
Yowzer.
Yowzer. Oh, that's...
And technically, they're hanging off the end of the couch.
Just giving you a hard time. You changed your intro, didn't you?
Just a bit.
All right. Welcome to episode 87 of
The Inside Flap
Podcast. Thanks again for joining us. Our show today is brought to you by IndieBound. Make sure you visit our website, theinsideflap.com, and click on the IndieBound link to head on over there while you're doing all your book buying. It doesn't cost you a cent, and it helps to support the show as well as independent book stores everywhere. Also, if you would be so kind as to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, that would be greatly appreciated. If you guys are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever it is, whatever platform you used, we would appreciate a nice 5-star review from you. We have a great guest today. Our guest today is internationally best-selling author Sherry LaPenna. Her new book is called The End of Her. This is a great book. This is a really good book. Laura will tell you all about that in just a little bit, and we will have that conversation for you in just a couple minutes. But first, I want to tell you guys about this. So, you know, Andrew, over here at the Inside Flap headquarters, or IFP HQ, if you want to call it that.
Sure.
We get a lot of mail. And, of course, by headquarters, I mean our house. Mm-hmm. We're in the snack shack in the backyard. But we do get a fair amount of books that come by here, delivered by our local UPS guy. And, you know, he's a real nice guy. I see him. He comes every afternoon, you know, usually around 4:30 in the afternoon. And just a great guy. We talk a little bit about the Nuggets. He's a big Denver Nuggets fan, so we have some quality Nuggets talk. Andrew, do you know your UPS guy? Do you chat with him at all?
You know, we don't seem to get the same UPS person, right?
Oh, really?
It seems to be different people.
Huh. We have the, that's weird. We have the exact same guy who comes by. I don't know his name. He does wear the shorts. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got the Kevin James, King of Queens UPS shorts on. He's not like the guy. We had a guy, I remember years ago when I used to work at a lumber yard in Maryland. And there's this guy who would come in. He came in every day. His name was Harry, and we called him Harry in a Hurry, or we called him Heart Attack Harry, because every time he came in, for now, I don't know why, and I've never seen it, certainly, this was business, but he always needed a check from our general manager, Liz. I don't know why, he was always asking for a check for her. But
he was the UPS guy?
He was the UPS guy, yeah. He was always asking, where's Liz? Liz, I need a check, and he was checking his
That's
watch.
A little shady.
15 times, I don't know I think, well, because I guess because she would have outgoing packages for him. Maybe that was it.
Oh.
But anyway, he's always asking for a check from her. And so we would always be like, gee, I don't know. Hey, Grant, can you go back, check in the back to see if Liz? So we would give him the runaround. And meanwhile, this guy would get more. He would come in. When he came in, he would look like picture Kramer on Seinfeld making an entrance. He's got these big bug eyes. His hair is going crazy. And it was just, where's the check? I need the check. I need the check. Harry, calm down. You want some water? I just need Liz. Where's Liz? I need Liz.
What did Liz include inside that check pocket?
I don't know.
Now, I don't know that I should mention, but this was a business that seemed to owe everybody money.
Oh.
the lumberyard?
Yeah.
Right, those are, I have no idea what's going on or what kind of business they were running, but something was going on. But anyway, he was always coming in. But that's that guy. That's Heart Attack Harry. No doubt he's had 15 heart attacks by now. God rest his soul. I don't know what's going on, but I still remember, I
actually don't know which job it was, but I still remember a UPS guy. It was a certain guy we had, and always friendly, but it was the shorts, and he was very short himself, and his shorts came down to like his knees.
was he always in a hurry?
He distracted, in a hurry, huffing and puffing too, because I feel like wherever it was, there were stairs involved. Oh. But it was every day, but he also was cheerful. Like rain, sleet, snow, whatever it was, cheerful. Well,
that's our guy. Our guy cheerful. Here at the house is definitely a cheerful guy.
Oh, our guy's always cheerful.
And he's also, I don't know if things have changed or evolved over the years. I know, you know, Jake, my cousin Jake was involved with implementing some kind of new program where UPS guys don't have to, or gals, don't have to make left turns anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So maybe they have more time to get their route done. I don't know. Maybe I'll have to ask him about that. But anyway, he comes last week, and I get the packages, whatever, sitting there chit-chatting. He's like, so, I see you guys have done a lot of work in your backyard there.
Oh, he saw that?
Yeah, he noticed it. I was like, oh, yeah, because we got rid of the old fence, and now we have a low fence, and you can see into the backyard.
Our front yard looks like, oh, all right.
Well, don't read ahead. Don't read ahead. So he can now see into the backyard since we got the low fence on the side.
Now it sounds like I was going to say a bad word.
So he's like, yeah, see, you got a pool back there. It's all gravel. You got the rock wall. You got plantings, beautiful flowers. Well, you got a little patio in the back. You got the fireplace there. It looks really nice. I'm like, yeah, thank you. No, he's standing there looking at it.
Yeah.
And he's looking at there, and we just kind of pause, and we're just taking in the backyard.
Yeah.
And he's smiling, and I'm smiling, and there's this second of pause. And then he looks down at his feet, and we're standing in the front yard. Then he looks to his left in the front yard.
Yeah.
Then he looks to his right in the front yard.
Yeah, get a good look.
And again, he says, so I see you did a lot of work in the backyard. What's the story with the front yard here?
Great question.
And now I'm looking at the front yard through his eyes.
Oh, it's so bad.
So I look to the left, I look to the right, and what I see is the grass that has not been green since the first month we moved in, which was during the Obama administration. Right now, it's a lovely shade of burnt yellow with tremendous amounts of bare earth patches scattered throughout it. I see like a 4-foot length of this 6-inch metal edging that is coming up from the ground, and it's kind of just like a 6-foot section of it that's just sticking out of the ground.
There's also random bricks in our yard.
There are bricks scattered all over the place. There's rocks. There are huge areas that were old garden beds that are now just patches where weeds have gone to die and come back again to life. There are dead bushes, perhaps a dead body buried there. It looks it looks like land that's been poisoned, like a toxic waste dump.
It does look
to be honest with you.
Like
what
land.
You would imagine would the earth would look like after a nuclear war. So I told our UPS guy, I was like, well, listen, we don't really care about curb appeal. And I was like,
did you say you say things to people that I wish you wouldn't say.
I said,
did you tell him we're planning an addition?
I told him planning on having one of those cows planted in the front yard like they do in these, you know, in neighborhoods to try to shame the person in the fiction up their front yard, so they stick like a purple cow, like a wooden purple cow, to get you to fix your front yard. And then I told him that we were, as soon as you know, as soon as Halley's Comet comes back for its next orbit, we were planning on fixing it up. So,
yeah, about then.
You know, yeah.
Give or take 20 to 30 years.
Right.
About then.
And he just kind of shook his head. So, well, I'm sure, you know, if it's anything as nice as your backyard, it'll be a fine front yard.
To this Gothic picket, which is what we have from Ye Olde Home Depot.
Yes. Separating the front from the backyard.
Is that our other fence was really tall.
Right.
So no one could see that our backyard actually looks nice.
Right. At least now they can see that we've done some work in the backyard.
I feel pleased about it because it's like, you see, I am trying.
We can do it. We're capable of doing it.
We are. The kid, this too will creep towards the front.
Passing math class. It can be done.
Yeah.
So the town tax assessors will also appreciate the fact that they can look into your backyard and see all those wonderful improvements.
That's true.
Let's hope nobody from the city office is listening to our show.
What is it, like a $50,000 project, Dave?
All right. So, Laura, how was your week?
Nothing over $500 was spent.
Either. No, certainly not. Certainly not.
My week's been good. So I got a new car.
Hey, how about that?
Yeah,
you did.
I did.
Yes, you did.
I did. And it was a little bit unexpected. And so I wasn't really wanting a new car. It's a long story. But I've had time this week. I've had it for about 5 days.
Yeah.
I've been driving it around town. Drives really easy. Mm-hmm. But I've been mourning my old car, which I really liked. So
now,
I held
on. You really
on,
loved your old car.
Held on to my old car for 9 years.
Your old car is a Volvo
C30.
Volvo
C30. It is
C30.
The car that, oh my gosh, I'm blanking. Hang on a second.
Presidents have ridden in parades in this car.
It is the car that Robert Pattinson drove in the Twilight saga.
Oh, did he really?
Yes, and it was 9 years old, and I like to hold on to cars. I feel like I can get my value out of them.
Uh-huh.
I like cars, but I don't like cars at the same time. So I will drive a car until it falls apart, basically.
And this car had been paid for.
Yeah.
So hang on a second here. So Laura.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to different. Let's let's look at the finer nuances of the English language. So,
okay.
So Laura.
Yes.
Would like to drive a car until it falls apart. Dave actually does drive a car until it falls apart.
That is true. That is true.
That's a bingo.
As we did establish that, well documented on the program.
That is true.
The last car.
You're right. I do
did
have
drive
a point.
Right into,
I do have a threshold.
Yes.
I have a threshold.
Yes.
I will point that out.
Yes.
Because looks are important to me.
The bumper fell off and it literally, I could not get it to move.
Yeah, no,
it
looks.
Would not
I will say,
going.
You're right. Looks are very important to
and
me.
And the mechanic yelled at me. Remember that.
Let's
not forget that. When I took it to the mechanics and we were on vacation, I called to get an estimate. He actually yelled at me, told me, I'm not fixing that. If you can't keep upkeep on a maintenance, do maintenance on a car, I can't do, there's nothing I can do for you. Shamed me.
So this car, I was been well maintained, but it has been like kind of totaled 3 times. So this week while I was driving around, I was reminiscing about this emotional thing that I've had.
This gauntlet.
The first time, I thought I would recount them.
Your old car.
Yeah, my old car.
The Volvo.
The first time was a crazy hailstorm. I was filming.
Oh, that's right.
My very first House Hunters renovation.
Yes.
And I'm an interior designer, and it was a big deal for me. Mm-hmm. And it was really exciting. It was probably day 3 of filming.
Yes.
And we had a hailstorm that will be written down in the history books. And it was, I'm not exaggerating, softball size hail that came down. It busted through the skylight while we were filming.
Through a skylight.
This is a great episode. DM me if you want to know the name of it, by
the
way.
There you go.
But we all ran to the window also and stared sadly at our cars, and our cars got destroyed. Destroyed.
Weeping copiously, watching. Yeah. You can't go out in it. Save them. What are you going to do?
So I called Geico. Geico knew about it because everyone else in the area had crazy hail damage.
Yeah.
They paid the $3,000 to $5,000 that it took to get my car dent-free.
Restore it to a beautiful sheen.
The next thing that happened, so that's number one.
Yeah.
The next thing that happened, we were on a dirt road, Dave and Sylvia and I.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't a rough road. It wasn't anything. It was like a gravel driveway.
Maybe. Many back roads here in Colorado in the wilderness
areas. It was not a rough road.
It was not many dirt roads.
A small rock.
Nothing.
I guess. We didn't hear this rock.
We never heard it ping, nothing.
Something hit the oil pan. And we did not know
that
we were.
That was outside of Trinidad, Colorado.
We were leaking oil until the oil light came on. And let me tell you, when the oil light comes on, it's too late.
It's too late.
Your engine is toast.
Yeah.
Toast. So we had to call AAA, cram ourselves into, I don't know.
We were in the middle of nowhere.
It was
unbelievable
disaster.
That we had like one bar of service. We were able to get a AAA truck out there.
So I called Geico again.
Mm-hmm.
Geico's getting an advertisement today.
They are, yeah.
And I told them what had happened to the car. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the car would have to be totaled and all of this.
There was like a half a day where we thought it was we had to pay for
it. And the woman,
new engine.
I'll never forget it. She's like, oh, honey, that's a roadside hazard. You're covered. You're covered. Honey, you're completely covered. And it was a combination of her calling me honey and I think my emotional state, because I started to cry on the phone.
On the phone.
I cried on the phone with this Geico woman.
Tears of joy.
Yeah, I cried. I cried.
Wow.
On the phone with a complete stranger with Geico. And so that was, I think, $5,000 to $7,000. Honestly, Geico probably more than the car at that point was worth.
Yeah.
And then the third incident that happened.
That was two.
Dave, I have mentioned this on the show before.
I don't remember the third time.
This was a time when Nelson was riding shotgun.
Oh, this.
Nelson started licking his lips urgently. And then...
Yeah. Nelson, the dog. Well, that's for our listeners who don't know.
Torrential diarrhea occurred in the passenger seat of my car.
Shot out like a cannon.
And I did think about stepping out of the car with the dog, tossing
just
the keys
walking,
in the front.
Walking right into traffic.
Walking off. But I didn't. I came home. We cleaned up the car.
Yep. Yeah, got a lot of
and
towels.
And I drove her further.
Threw a lot of towels away.
So that's the end of an era. It's the end of that little era there. And
did
Sylvia's-
you call Geico? Did you see if they covered explosive diarrhea in the passenger seat? Dog diarrhea.
I didn't.
Mm. Honey, you're completely covered.
Honey, you're covered. That's a hazard. That's a hazard. It's
covered.
A pet hazard.
Mm.
Yeah.
But,
so there you go.
Well, that is a business is for people that have dogs, they should actually have like an extra insurance for pets.
Yeah, they should
to cover. I mean, so Geico, if you're listening,
yes,
you know,
this is another way to get us.
We'll take 10%.
However,
these weren't cloth.
At this
these
point,
were not leather seats either.
No.
That wiped off. These were cloth seats.
No, not leather seats.
It seeped in there. You had to get.
And it's
seat
a very
covers.
Small car.
Yeah,
it's not a big car.
So a similar thing happened to my dad when we were kids.
Oh yeah,
except it was Andrew, not
it
the
was
dog.
Andrew.
And I remember my dad riding up the road with the dog in the back seat, a big Irish setter, and I will never forget the look on my dad's face as a few minutes later as he turned around and pulled back in the driveway, and he just had this very sober looking expression on his face.
And
was it
the dog was never seen again?
No, the dog got sick in the back seat of the car.
Yeah.
So
So that was my memories of the car, and so it was that. It was
end of an era.
Me driving around in a beautiful, brand new, clean smelling car, thinking about this other car, and it's just kind of funny how the memories that I had were not good memories. Really,
those are not good memories.
No, but they were memories that I clung to.
And now that car
and
is
now,
at your parents being saved for Sylvia.
Because I'm a weirdo, I have horrible new car anxiety where I'm scared that something's going to happen now to my new car.
Like I keep asking you,
I can't enjoy.
Are you excited about your new car?
No,
how much fun is it to drive the new car?
I am riddled with anxiety.
Still has that new car smell.
It's the worst. And all I can think about is what's the first thing that's going to happen.
That is a Mazda. What did you get?
A CX-30.
CX-30.
And I still cannot identify it in a parking lot.
No, we were in the parking lot today. I was walking up to the car. She's, no, it's not that car. It's the other car. I'm like, I just saw you come out of this car. It's this car. She's like, oh, yeah, that is my car.
Heaven help me. If I have to take it to an airport lot, I will not know which car it is.
Never will. Nope.
Andrew, how are you?
Good. You know, it's been a busy couple weeks. So I had my birthday, you know.
Yeah.
Yep. The big 5-0.
I guess 11 days ago. Yesterday was Mary Kate's birthday.
I saw that.
She turned 6.
Yeah. Happy birthday, MK.
So, and then Peter has birthday August 2nd.
Oh, yeah.
And so he
it's
turns.
Birthday season in the Dowd household.
It is birthday season.
So we have the dog's birthday, then my birthday, then Mary Kate's birthday, and Peter's birthday. So
how old's Peter turning?
9. And so we've got 4 birthdays inside of 2 weeks.
Nice.
Well, so, you know, but so it's busy.
Nice.
For those families who count dog
Oh, that's
birthdays.
Why you said you forgot to bring us cake. I was like, what kind of cake do you have?
Well,
you have birthday cake.
Yeah, for Mary Cake. So Katie made a double-decker.
Oh, yeah. You promised some birthday cake.
Yeah.
I told him. I was so glad he didn't bring it.
I'm telling him right now.
Dave just looked really unhappy.
Cream cheese frosting.
Red velvet, something like that.
There is absolutely really nice. No need to tell us anything about the cake if you don't have it in your car right now.
Yeah, and,
thank you.
And I do not. Okay. And so it's been busy, and so we so I had the little
playing that for myself.
Yeah, so I had the surprise party, and then
we talked about that last week. Go back and check out episode 86 for a full recap of that.
So we were camping, and we had plans to take this 2-3 week trip on the Midwest with our camper. So we were up in Granby, Colorado, and we're finding that Granby is famous for all sorts of things. So there is a world-class ranch there. It's called the Sea Lazy U Ranch, and it is one of the top resorts in the country, if not the world.
Is that owned and operated by Yoda? Sea Lazy U.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, you should do an advertisement for them. But so basically,
I'll look it up.
But the place is about $3,000 a night.
What?
And that's the so our
with a name like Clazy U.
Sea Lazy U. Clazy U.
Just look at Clazy U.
It's a ranch that's been in operation since 1919. It's a working dude ranch.
Oh, it's an all inclusive.
Yeah. So it is not. Not for the faint-hearted.
That
but
includes
right
the dudes. The that price includes dudes. Huh?
Now, we've also found out another historical fact of Granby, Colorado.
Yes.
Does anybody know what Granby, Colorado is famous for?
No, I have no idea. Mosquitoes. I don't know.
Killdozer.
What's that?
Do you guys remember Killdozer?
Is that the town? Yeah,
What's
I know exactly
Killdozer?
What you're talking about.
I have
about.
No idea.
Okay, so this
is just another thing that everyone knows about but me.
Yeah,
it's a news story.
Yeah,
news story from a few years ago.
So what happened is and this will be the short version, obviously, is the town council was using I forget what the term is, but they were basically taking a guy's land, forcing him to sell his land. Right, I mean, they without a doubt were taking advantage of their powers to take advantage of this guy's property, and so this guy decided to, he was not going to take.
I have a bad feeling about
taking
this.
Sitting down.
I'm extrapolating from the name Kill and then Dozer,
and so only the operator of the Dozer.
This guy might not be in his
only
right.
Only the name. Operator of the Dozer.
So, anyways, he took a huge bulldozer. Mm-hmm. And this guy welded steel plates around it, and he turned it into a tank. And he put steel plates.
Am I going to feel Let bad for laughing at this?
All right,
and not just he didn't just put steel plates in there.
You need to Google.
He sandwiched
killdozer.
Oh my goodness!
He sandwiched concrete in between the steel plates.
Wow!
And so he basically went and bulldozed half this little town. basically until the engine overheated.
Wow.
What?
He turned
He bulldozed the town?
He turned this into a tank.
The man behind the Granby Bulldozer Rampage.
Yep. Wow.
He bulldozed like brick buildings. Brick buildings he knocked over.
He's like Michael Douglas in Falling Down. He couldn't take it anymore. Pushed beyond the brink.
It is like Michael Douglas in Falling Down.
Yep.
So, but,
So that's the town you're moving to. Congratulations.
Well, our vacation home.
Marvin Heemeyer.
That is really funny.
Marvin John Heemeyer.
Did he die? Oh, yeah. He killed himself.
Yeah. Mm. So he did not. Nobody got hurt other than him.
Well, Wow, he's lucky no one got hurt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these things don't move super fast.
That's probably true. You know?
Sure, yeah. Plenty of time to get out of the way of a bulldozer.
Now, I guess there's a Killdozer Doc documentary on Netflix.
Oh, really?
Right now.
We'll have to check that out.
And so I found out about this because somebody in my family knew we were buying the house, and then they saw the documentary.
Wow.
And they could not wait. It's like, isn't that where you bought that vacation house?
That's really funny. It's a brand new, it's called Tread. And
Tread.
Yeah, it's out. Actually, it's out today, I think.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
Look at that.
There you go.
Serendipitous.
There's some watching right there.
Now, Andrew, I did look up the resort that you're buying your house in. So I did a little research because I'm curious to see what people are saying about online. Well, I read some of the reviews of the RV park. Place got, you know, great reviews. Everybody seems to like
it. It's a luxury RV resort.
But then I came across this resort. RV resort, but also with homes in it.
Oh, like yeah, Andrew's yeah. House. It's like a camp.
This is from user Margot R. from September of last year. And the title of this post is Locked in the Laundry Room. And she says, Margot says, new RV resort, but really need to work out the kinks. I am literally locked in the laundry room with an attendant who also locked himself in here with me.
Oh, no.
Too much money for the actual level of amenities here. Lots of pomp, but no circumstances. Won't be back anytime soon.
Oh, that's really funny.
No circumstances.
How did that attendant get locked in?
A lot of circumstance going on there in the laundry room.
Sounds like a fun day.
I mean, can you imagine that poor attendant with this woman? I'm getting on a TripAdvisor right now.
No, I can't imagine. Like,
oh, ma'am, can you just please calm down?
Yeah, like the first and last day of that poor attendant.
Angrily punching the words into her phone.
Wow.
So it reminds me of the time that Katie and I got locked in the laundry room. It was not so bad.
Okay. I don't think there was anything going on with that attendant.
You could say we took a little tumble.
Okay.
Shecky Dowd. He'll be here
throughout the weekend.
Just throughout the weekend, you know.
Inconceivable!
Okay, well, it's time now for our interview with Sherry LaPena. Sherry is the internationally best-selling author of The Couple Next Door, A Stranger in the House. Is that the other one you read, Laura?
Yeah, that was really good. I reviewed that last year, right around this time, because her books come out in the summertime. She is a writer. You will see her books when you're walking through an airport.
That's always, I would think that would be.
You've made it.
That would be a good sign.
If you see your book.
Yeah, I'm an airport author. That's right. I'm an airport author.
Like just in one of those small bookshops in an airport, you're like, oh, I've made it.
Yep.
I've made it.
The little mass market paperbacks or even the trade size.
No,
the
it's a
size.
Trade. Yep. She gets hers. It's hardcover. It's not a paperback. She'll get it out there. Yeah,
she sure will.
Yeah.
So
Sherry's made it.
Of course, nobody's in an airport nowadays, so I don't know if there's.
I think more and more people
the
are.
There
but
you
you're
go.
Right.
Yeah. Well, here's one for you to get. The end of her. Now, Sherry was a lawyer and an English teacher, and we talked to her about that.
Funny.
Before turning her hand to fiction, and she was up in Toronto when we talked to her, and we begged her to take us in. But in any case, here is our conversation with Sherry LaPena.
New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the
Are you up in you're up in Canada?
Yeah.
Very nice. If you are accepting Americans into your country at any point in the near future, please let us know because we would love to come up there and stay there forever, or at least until November.
It's pretty nice up here for the reason that you're, you know, implying. And our COVID numbers are relatively low. They're quite nice.
Yeah, they are nice.
But we're still in quite a bit of lockdown here in Toronto anyway.
Oh, really? Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, like we don't have bars open or anything like that.
Yeah, imagine that. Something sensible when there's a virus ravaging the country. Wow. Well, I wonder what that's like.
You're welcome to come
and
to Denver.
We all wear masks.
Yeah. Nobody's arguing the fact that you shouldn't have your mask on when you go out in public. That sounds sensible.
Yeah. Like up here, we watch that and we don't get it. Like we're all so well behaved and we just do what we're told and we put our masks on.
Yeah.
We one would hope that things were the same down here, but it's just not. I guess this is the monster that we've created. So
it's true.
But anyway, speaking of monsters, listen, Laura and I. Oh, by the way, I'm Dave, and this is Laura.
Hi.
And we're the Inside Flap.
Hi, Laura. Hi.
So if she had her druthers, she'd be keeping me in the basement. But she does let me come out for her interviews. But anyway, we loved your latest book, The End of Her, a story about a newly married couple, with new parents of colicky twins. Which, by the way, Sherry, I mean, if you're going to treat your characters like this, not only give them twins, but make them colicky. Goodness gracious. I can think of nothing worse than you could do to characters, viewers. Anyway,
it's pretty horrible.
Yeah. Stephanie.
I've had a colicky baby, so I know it's pretty bad.
Oh, really?
I only had a single.
Okay, yeah. Our daughter was not a great baby
not
as
great,
well.
But not and colicky.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really wrecks your mind.
It does.
It?
Yes.
People who haven't been through sleep deprivation don't realize how all encompassing it is.
Right. Yeah.
It really messes with you.
You also never, once you're in it, and I think your character Stephanie had this too, you don't think it's going to end. The doctors are like, oh, it'll end after, 6 weeks or whatever. It feels like the rest of your life you're going to be, walking around at 2 a.m. Yeah.
So now we have this couple, Stephanie and Patrick, and their exhausted life is turned upside down when an old flame of Patrick shows up and accuses him of murdering his first wife. What a great premise, Sherry. What was it that inspired this book?
Well, I read a story on the news about something that happened in a blizzard in the U.S. years ago. Mm. And this happens every once in a while. So if your car is in a snowbank and there's a blizzard, and if the tailpipe gets plugged with snow,
right, yeah.
You shouldn't sit in the running car because you'll die of carbon monoxide poisoning.
Wow.
So I read this news story. There are a few of them, actually, but there's one I read where the wife and child were playing outside and they got cold because it was taking a long time to shovel up the car. So they got in the car to warm up. Well, 10 or 15 minutes later, they're dead.
Wow.
And I thought, that's terrible. And of course, it was declared an accident, as they always are.
Right.
But I thought, if you were a man who wanted to kill your pregnant wife, what a great way to do it. Because you don't have to get rid of the body. It's so easy, right?
And it is easy.
They just go to sleep.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's way better than these, forensically difficult. Anyway, so that was the premise. I started thinking, if you had a character to whom that happened, you would really have to wonder, was it an accident or was it the perfect murder?
Mm-hmm.
So all through the book, that's the question. Did he do it or not?
And
did he know the tailpipe was plugged?
Yeah, I must have flipped back and forth 50 times whether or not
I did too. Yeah.
And we're out here. We're in Colorado. So I don't know if that news story you saw was in Colorado. But we get a lot of snow here.
Well, that's why I picked Colorado, because you've got that great snowy...
And so I might call this suburban noir. In your last book, Someone We Know, which I loved, was fantastic. It also kind of qualifies to me as suburban noir. And as a thriller writer, is there something that attracts you to the suburbs?
You know what? It's not the suburbs so much. It's the normal, everyday, average person.
Mm-hmm.
So, some of mine are set more urban and some are suburban. But the idea for me isn't so much the suburbs. It's more like I don't live in the suburbs. I live, in a
big city
area.
Right. Yeah.
But it's the idea of just the average everyday Joe. Like it's not, a super spy or a special larger than life character. I like to focus on people that are just like you and me and what can happen to them. So that's really, it's more the normal everyday people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that was kind of how we can relate to it and really gives us a nice jumping in point to feel what they're feeling, for sure.
Yeah. Like people can identify because they're not very different from the readers.
No.
Well, they are. Like they're horribly different.
Well, hold on. Easy. What are you saying? What are you saying about? How dare you? What is this kind of slander? We just met, Sherry. Come on. Now, you described kind of a horror story, you know, as we were talking about these incredibly fussy, colicky twin babies, two exhausted parents, no real support systems. Now, even without Erica, the old flame, Stephanie and Patrick's life is just bordering on unimaginable. Do you isolate them on purpose? Is that a way for you to kind of like get the wrap your story around what's going on with these characters?
Yeah. Well, partly it's yes, I isolate them. The more isolated they are, the better it is for the paranoia, and there's no one there to say, "Oh, hold on, let's look at this reasonably." but also in this case, I had to have her fairly isolated because her parents were dead because they had to leave her a lot of money, so she couldn't have parents. Yeah, but you know, I could have given her siblings, but I didn't really want someone to be there holding her hand and taking the babies and letting her get her rest and all that stuff. So, yeah, it was deliberate.
Yeah, because that added for me to the horror of it. There's no support system, and it felt so stressful, you know, as someone who has been a mom, and that's part of that suburban feeling too, because you are away from your neighbors and you don't always know who your neighbors are. And, man, you made a playground so creepy. Also, there was a scene in this with a playground. Yeah. And I was like, I've never felt that more creeped out by a playground before. It was awesome.
In broad daylight.
Yes, too. Daylight. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. I enjoyed that scene.
Yeah.
You give yourself a little high five.
Thriller writing 101, make things worse for your characters, make them even more worse, like just get them, you know, make it as awful as you possibly can. So that's what I do. I just keep ramping it up.
Oh, it was so good. But Stephanie, you know, despite being just beaten down by these twins, she's a very strong female character. Because at first I thought, and I think I thought she might have been a weaker woman, but she wasn't at all. She was a very interesting counterpart to Erica. And how important was it for you to give Stephanie this inner strength? She was not someone... At first glance, you might think she's one way, but you pretty much immediately, as you start reading the book, you realize, oh, no, she's a strong woman.
Yeah, she is a strong woman. And she's very different from Erica. Erica's also a strong woman, but their strengths are very different.
Yeah,
I mean,
Stephanie's
a really good character in the sense that she's trying to do the right thing and, you know, protect her kids and all that. Erica is just out for Erica. She's manipulative. She's cold. She's a psychopath or a sociopath or something. Yeah. She doesn't care who she hurts. And she's very upfront about it. She's like,
No bones about it. She doesn't care.
Yeah. This is what I do. And I'm really good at it. Like, she's really quite proud of what she does and how well she does it. She's a very cold-hearted, awful person.
Yeah, she really is. I read an article, interview with you, an older one, that you are kind of a little bit fascinated with psychopaths in terms of your reading taste.
Yes.
Would you tell us, what's so fascinating about it for you?
I think it's fascinating that there are a lot of them around that you may not be aware of. So they estimate maybe 1% of the population are sociopaths or psychopaths. And, you know, they rise to positions of power.
Wow.
Wink, wink. Oh, I see you winking. That's right.
Anyway, there are all kinds of people with have a different outlook on things than the one that we would expect. And they're just fascinating people because, honestly, they can do so much harm. Because if you don't really care about other people, if you don't, you can do no end of harm. Like what stops people from doing harm is they care about others.
Yeah.
And if you have a character who truly doesn't care, then, you know, they can wreak real havoc.
When you read these books, do you look around you in your own life and start wondering, like,
there's a psychopath?
I have in my life met some people who I think I've probably met two people that I think in real life that I think are psychopaths.
Wow.
That I've crossed paths with.
Wow, that's
and that's I've been told that they're psychopaths, and certainly they would fit the bill. They're not killers or anything, because
yeah,
most of them
they're not all killers.
Violent sexual, you know,
yeah,
mutilators. Most of the psychopaths are just people who put on a very charming exterior, mm-hmm, but they'll just do whatever they want, and they really don't care. And there's a few of them around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And your character, you know, Erica, she's just a classic blonde femme fatale, mm-hmm, with that mask on. Of, mm-hmm, you know, I thought of like the old Hitchcock, like Kim Novak and people like that for her.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, wow, that's good. Yeah.
Did you have someone in mind? If you were going to cast her in a movie, did you have somebody in mind?
Oh, someone just asked me this, and I'm so bad with actors. And I know, I don't know. I don't watch a lot of movies. Yeah, I can't think of you. Can you think of anyone? It's not like the writer has any control over that anyway.
Yeah.
So right. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it.
I think there's a woman named Blake Lively. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's married to Ryan Reynolds. Mm-hmm. And she's a gorgeous
blonde.
I've
heard of Ryan Reynolds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's a gorgeous blonde. And I think she'd be really well.
Or, you know, Sharon Stone back in the day.
Back in the day, Sharon Stone, of course.
Or the one, I don't know her name, but the one who played the lead in Gone Girl.
Oh, yeah.
She was blonde and gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, she was.
Sociopathic. Oh, yeah. I don't know her name, but she would be very good.
She would. Yeah. And Patrick was so slick and smarmy to me.
Yeah.
Well, he could be Ryan Reynolds. He could be Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. There you go. Maybe Ryan Reynolds. Maybe Chris Pine.
Oh, I love Chris Pine. Yeah. Oh, that would be devastating for me to watch.
Sherry. You wouldn't be able to handle that.
I could not handle that. I don't think that
the wolf in sheep's clothing.
But that would be a good one, because I would not want him to be. Mm-hmm. Yes, so yeah. I would be on the team Patrick for that one.
We can't have that. Now, Sherry, an awful lot happens in this book to get us from page one to the end of the book. And what an ending that is. We'll leave that at that. But mm-hmm, my God, that ending, loved it.
Yeah.
How much do you outline your books?
I don't outline my books.
Wow, really?
Not at
That's
all.
That's crazy.
No. And I've tried, like, do you know Claire McIntosh?
Yeah.
She writes British thrillers.
Yeah.
Anyway, she used to be a police officer, and she told me what I needed to do, because I can't outline. I don't know how to do it. So she said, what you need is a murder wall, like they do in the police.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So I got this giant piece of white paper, and my daughter, who was, you know, younger at the time, she took it out in the backyard. She splashed all this red paint on it, so it looked like blood spatter.
Oh, oh, so sweet.
And I put it up on the wall, and I tried to do my novel with the stickies. Like, I tried really hard.
And the
like,
strings.
And I can't think of anything. Like, I just, I start with my idea, but then if I start with my idea of a guy whose wife died in that snowbound cars.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I start there and I think, okay, what happens next? And I can't think, because the way I work is something happens, like Erica arrives. Like, I can plot that. I can say Erica arrives to ruin everything. But until I've written the scene where she says what she's going to say, I don't really know what's going to happen. I just can't plot it out. I can't think of how it's going to happen, because what happens is things will happen in the book, and that will lead to something else, and that will lead to something else, and that's how I go on.
Huh. Well, I think it's more like, and a lot of cops have more of like an analytical mind, and they're looking, you know, they can track things literally, and then that visual representation of the strings, and this leads to this, and this. So it's like you're more of the kind, you get like want to jump into their minds and get into their skin. Mm-hmm. More like a method actor and kind of, spiritually.
That's exactly what it is.
Guide you there, huh?
I go into their heads, and so when I'm in it, I'm like right in their heads. So, like, I guess I get into a psychopathic head.
Yeah, you do.
And I, and yeah, it's cool. And then I'm in their point of view, and I move it along, and then I switch to the other point of view and what their reaction is to that, and then I switch to something else, and it's just it moves it along for me. Huh. And then by the end of it, I have a first draft with the basic story. And then when I rewrite, I have to go back and tweak and change and, you know, tighten and all that, crafting the meticulous plot. It's not that perfect when I write the first draft, but the bones are there. Like, I know the shape of it, and I've got the ending, and I've got the twists and so on. So
Wow. So that's fascinating.
But did you have that ending in mind when you started it out, or did that just happen? Really? Wow. Not at all. Wow. She's shaking her head. No.
In fact,
yeah.
That ending, the very, like the epilogue,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
came after I'd written the whole first draft.
I wondered.
I'm pretty sure.
I felt like I owed you like a thank you letter. And I don't want to give anything away.
Just tell her thank you right now.
But thank you for that, because I needed that. I know some people might not have needed that ending, but I needed that as a reader. And I did a fist pump in the air on the couch.
I think that ending had to happen.
Yeah.
So, but I certainly didn't know that until the end.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I wanted it to happen so bad.
It is kind of crazy. I know.
Yeah. So also in this book, there's a couple in the book, in the end of her, who adopted a baby. And years later, they're worried about having this baby who's grown up a little bit taken from them. And I just can't imagine anything worse for adoptive parents. And it would have to be one of those nightmares that in the back of your head would just keep you awake at night in the dark of the night. You really love torturing parents, I think.
I do.
That's the takeaway from this book.
Well, I've done it in a lot of my books, like The Couple Next Door. I was torturing the parents. And,
what's going on here, Sherry?
Because having children is so emotional, right? I mean, that's if you've got a weak point, it's your kids.
Yeah,
so it's an easy way to get the reader engaged and make the stakes really high, basically.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they say, make the stakes really high and torture, you know, make things get worse all the time for your characters. So that's really what I do.
Cool. Well, listen, before you were a best-selling, fantastic thriller writer, I was reading you were a lawyer and an English teacher. Now, as an English teacher myself, or former English teacher myself, current drama teacher, possibly phys ed teacher, which, you know,
that's
there's a
what
lot
being
going
a teacher is, right?
Yeah. Which job was worse, a lawyer or an English teacher?
Oh, lawyer.
Yeah.
By far.
Yeah.
I hated being a lawyer.
Did you really?
Did not like it.
Yeah.
Crime writers used to be lawyers.
What kind of lawyer were you, or what kind of law did you practice, or what was going on there?
A little bit of everything. Yeah. I didn't practice for long, but I did some corporate and some real estate and some bankruptcy, a lot of bankruptcy.
It sounds boring.
Sounds awful.
It was awful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's some people love it, but it didn't suit me at all.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
about killing people.
You are very well suited because you have that thriller mind. Some of us, most of us, would read an article about someone dying in a car in the snow and think, "Oh, that's so sad. I need to, I need to tell people so this doesn't happen to other people."
I'm going to post this on my Facebook
so they don't.
But the thriller writer is like,
wait a second.
Well, you should sit around in a bar with a bunch of crime writers talking about what's the best way to get rid of a body. Oh my
goodness. What is the best way to get rid of a body?
Well, you know, some people swear by the pigs. You starving pig.
Right.
But it's been done too much.
Yes.
You can't do that anymore.
Right.
So it's really hard. So I felt very clever coming up with something where somebody might have done a murder and didn't have to get rid of the body.
It is. Big pat on the back for yourself, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Sherry, time out for our segment we call Fast 8 Fast Questions, in which we find out a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched and or binged and really enjoyed?
Suits, I'm watching right now.
Suits.
Suits? Do you know Suits?
No.
It's about lawyers. Yeah, and before that, more of my usual style is, I don't know if you've heard of it, The White House Farm Murders.
No.
It's a British series about this true crime. A bunch of people are murdered in a farmhouse.
Oh, I'm writing that one down.
Yeah, right up my alley.
That
right
sounds
up my
really
alley.
Good.
It's a great, great story.
If you could time travel to any period in time, what would it be or where?
Ooh. Oh, that's a good one. England 1920s, maybe. Oh. 1920s, golden age of crime. Oh. I just think that's a really, really cool time. And you wouldn't have to worry about all the technology.
Oh, that's right. True.
Yeah. I think that would be fun.
Oh, that's
I've been
awesome.
Nostalgic for that period.
I like that. I like that. You'll have to do a, well, I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do. Never mind. Sorry.
Sorry, I'm excited. My turn. Here we go. What is something that people often get wrong about you?
Oh, they think I'm American.
Oh.
I've had that quite a lot lately. Yeah, people often assume I'm American.
Really? Every once in a while, I hear the ooh in your accent. So I can tell. A trained linguist as myself. Can tell, so no worries there.
People just assume because they just assume, you know, anybody from Canada assumes American.
I think I'm actually,
and it's not Americans, it's British people too will assume that I'm American.
I'm wearing my Haida Gwaii shirt right now, actually. I don't know if you've ever gotten up to Haida Gwaii on the off the coast of Vancouver, little island up there, really nice, beautiful.
Yeah. Movie you would not skip past while flipping through the channels?
Like I say, I'm not great with movies.
You said you don't watch a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Like Body Heat. Remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
Kathleen Turner, William Hurt.
Yeah.
Lawrence Kasdan. That's a great one. Yeah, that is really good.
Yeah, that is
good. I like those. Femme Fatales.
And the other one, Fatal Attraction, was good.
Yes.
Yeah, yep.
And
that's right up your alley.
Yeah, a few, movies like that I really like.
Yeah.
The Powerful Women.
Yeah that there was a whole era of that, like a little bit of a, maybe half a decade of that femme fatale.
True, yeah.
That
came
out.
Yeah, there were.
It was a lot of fun.
All right, what is one book you'll never forget?
That's so hard because there's so many, right?
Yeah.
Probably Gone Girl.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Gone Girl was a real eye-opener for me because that was such a good psychopathic couple, and just that one, the ending. I mean, that was a game changer for me, that book.
That's interesting.
Gillian Flynn's Gone Girl.
You might not do this, but I'm gonna ask you anyway. Go to karaoke song, or you know, you could also think of it as a song you'd belt in the shower.
New York, New York.
Well, no wonder people think you're American.
And you wonder why people think you're American, Jerry. Come on.
That's I just
iconic.
Really like New York.
That's,
and every time, today's my book's out, and every day that I have a release in the States, I play New York, New York. And every time I'm about to go and I'm packing, I always play it really loud.
That's great.
Frank Sinatra.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's a beautiful song. I love that song.
Yeah.
What is a favorite meal of yours?
Ooh, pasta.
Any kind of sauce on that?
Pasta with lots of cheese. My daughter makes some amazing sauces. I'm a terrible cook. My daughter's an amazing cook. Actually, my husband's also an amazing cook. I hate cooking, but I love eating. So
there you
awesome.
Go.
Yeah. It's a match.
Good to surround yourself with good cooks then.
Yeah. And nice. last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
I am currently reading the new Claire McIntosh. It's an arc called Hostage, and it's really good. It's about a woman who's a cabin crew, like an air steward, in a long-haul flight from London to Sydney, Australia, and her daughter's kidnapped. That's all I've got so far. So I've just started. And it's really good. So that's what I'm reading.
More trouble for the parents, right up your alley. All right, Charlotte. Well, we loved your book, The End of Her. So good. And thank you for spending a little time with us. We really appreciate
it. Thanks very much. We're big fans.
Yep.
Oh, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Take care.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
The Inside Flap.
All right. She was a lot of fun. Really, really gracious and very nice.
Yes, thank
to talk
you, Sherry.
So thank you to Sherry. Now let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Mm-hmm. Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Laura, what are you going to talk about this week?
Well, surprise, surprise.
Yes.
I am reviewing The End of Her by Sherry LaPenna.
Yes. This is, I read this one also. Mm-hmm. This is a great book. Tell us about it.
So, I have a caveat for this book.
Ah, I do not like books that come with caveats.
Oh, you're going to like this one.
Okay, this is a good caveat.
So, this is a fantastic thriller.
I would
thriller.
Like some caviar with my caveat.
You can consume it in two long sittings, or you can space it out over a vacation. Mm. It's a quick read. It's going to have you hunched over, muttering to yourself, and just rapidly turning the pages.
Yes.
However.
Yes.
If you are a new mom to a colicky baby or a fussy baby, right. You may want to give your baby time to go past that, to get out of that phase before you pick this book up.
Yeah,
don't you think, Dave?
Trigger warning.
Yes.
If you have a colicky kids,
yes.
Do not pick up this book.
Do not grab
no,
this
no.
book.
Please, whatever you do.
Do not give this
Let
to,
those kids grow up.
Just
let
give them
get
2 weeks.
The colic, yes.
Till they're done with it.
Colic free.
So the best, as a single dad, the best parenting advice I ever got
mm-hmm.
yep.
was sometimes you just have to let the kids cry and walk away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And without a doubt.
Andrew, dropping that like nobody's ever heard that one.
Well, I'd never heard it before.
It's
but
Dr. Spock.
And there's some people.
From the 70s.
Well, and some people won't do that.
The old Ferber method.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
Ferberism.
Mm-hmm. You know, but you get to the point where that's the case now.
Well, you got to take care of yourself as a parent because you're the only one that can keep that little thing alive.
Yeah. And then the worst parenting advice was, you know, you just sleep when they sleep.
Oh, I know. Isn't that the worst?
It's like, right, yeah. Like there's not a million, things to get
I know.
Done. Like,
I know.
I have the responsibilities of a 5 week old infant.
Yeah. Just sleep when they sleep. I know. I completely agree with you. Mm-hmm. I hated that advice and I got it all the time. So this book is about newly married, new parents of fussy, colicky twins. So Stephanie, the mom, is exhausted all of the time. She's getting by on about 4 hours of sleep.
Yes.
She's living in the suburbs. She really doesn't have any close friends or family members to help or even give her moral support.
Right.
And her husband, Patrick, he's an architect. He works in the city. Mm-hmm. He seems like a nice guy. He helps her out with the twins when he gets home from work. But he's also trying to get his business off the ground.
Yeah.
So
not around.
He also is maybe getting 6 hours of sleep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're both just sleepless, taking turns with these twins. So enter from stage left, Dave.
Yes.
A classic.
I like that stage analogy. Thank you.
A classic Hitchcock blonde femme fatale named Erica.
Yeah, boy!
Flav likes that.
I guess he does. So Erica was Patrick's... Yeah, Erica was Patrick's first wife's best friend.
That's right.
She contacts Patrick and she tells him that if he doesn't pay her an enormous amount of money, she will A, tell Patrick's new wife, Stephanie, that Patrick cheated on his first wife with her, mm-hmm. and B, tell her and the authorities that he murdered his first wife and their unborn child. So this,
not a nice lady.
No, and then this death is what we talked about with Sherry LaPenna.
Right.
And this, Dave, is what separates thriller writers from the rest of us, because Sherry, she gets a thrill out of murder ideas. And the rest of us just feel horrified.
But she's talking about that. Yeah, I read a news story about the couple in the car and they died because the car was running.
I'm going to explain that in a second. Yeah. Yes. And Dave and I are like, oh, I don't know if I should laugh at this. But she's laughing.
Terrible.
And she seems really nice.
I knew this would be a great book.
Yeah, that's a thriller writer brain.
Yeah. Yep.
It's unbelievable. So Patrick's first wife died. We've talked about this. Waiting for him to shovel out their car during a big snowstorm. She was about 8 months pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
She was sitting in the car while the engine was running for warmth, and he was shoveling.
Yep.
So the tailpipe was completely buried in snow, and she died of carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yep.
This evidently happens every once in a while, at least once or twice a year. The central question to this book is, did Patrick know that this was deadly?
Right.
Did he know about this?
How much
or
did he know?
Was it a tragedy? So this book gets to you.
Now, there's, I couldn't. I kept going back and forth. Like I said,
I did too.
It
messes with your mind. And then there's something about the character of Stephanie. She seemed really innocent and just kind of helpless.
Yeah.
Home and tied to these two twin babies. And then Erica is such a classic femme fatale who's insane. and you just don't know what's going to happen. Like the
I do
whole
have
time,
audio
you're just
for,
guessing.
I do have audio from Erica talking about Patrick or to Patrick.
I will look for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will find you. And I will kill you.
Now, I bet you didn't know she had that deep
I didn't,
voice,
I didn't.
Did you?
So yeah. Surprised. She seems so delicate.
A lot like
and
Liam Neeson. It's crazy.
So she's obviously a smoker.
I think so, yes.
So this is a great read, classic thriller. It really is kind of a domestic noir, really, psychological thriller. Mm-hmm. The End of Her by Sherry LaPenna.
Yep, good stuff. Mm-hmm. And that is recommended by
Laura Medicus.
And myself. But I've got a book for you guys this
Dave
week.
Dave Medicus.
That's my name. This book is fantastic. I love this book. This book is absolutely amazing. It's a book that has stayed with me for quite some time now. And has even, now listen, it is not that often that I'll read a book. It's incredibly rare for this to happen. In fact, it hardly ever happens, but it did happen with this book. And that is that this book got into my subconscious so deeply that it actually invaded my dream.
Wow.
Yes, it did.
Oh, I woke Sylvia up this morning.
Yes.
And she was muttering to me about a crafting table.
Crafting
when your
table.
Child starts muttering to you about a crafting table, they have been playing too much Minecraft, is what I'm going to say.
Oh, right. That's true. Yeah. Well, this book got in my dreams. The name of the book is called The Only Good Indians by Stephen Graham Jones. Now, I've been fortunate enough this year to read some really good books by some Native American authors. Moon of the Crusted Snow by Wolfgang Rice. There was Al Goingback's Coyote Rage. And now this guy, Stephen Graham Jones. Now, let me tell you something about him. He's a member of the Blackfeet tribe. He also has a PhD from our alma mater. That's right, Florida State, yes, as we are methodically doing our...
The Seminoles.
The Seminoles, yes. He has a PhD from Florida State, and listen to this. Now, we're down here in Littleton, Colorado. He, from what I saw, now, I don't know if he still is a professor there, but he was a professor as recently as a couple years ago up at CU Boulder.
Huh.
Yes, a resident of Boulder, a local author. So if we get Sylvia up there, as she was talking about maybe going to CU, maybe she can have him as a professor. And if he's half a good professor as he is a writer, then he's a hell of a good professor.
So I know somebody that works at CU Boulder. And, you know, I think we can get Sylvia in there on like a...
The old okie doke.
A scholarship.
Okay. You know, what do they call that? A rowing scholarship, I believe.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Crew?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The crew scholarship. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So
like the Winklevoss twins.
Yeah.
From The Social Network. Anyway, this book seeped.
Dave.
Yes.
From real life, you mean?
That's true. Well, you know, I always go movies first.
That's
then
really
real
funny.
Life. A movie
yeah.
based on real life, the Winklevoss twins, whatever the hell their names are.
Winklevoss?
Played by the same guy. Anyway, this book, it seeped into my consciousness and festered away in there, rattling around in my bones and soul. This is a book that will, listen, this book will creep you out.
Hmm.
It will give you the chills and it will just make you feel. Often, all three at the same time.
Hmm.
And this is unsettling horror. This is a horror book. This is pervasive. And it might actually, I think if I was to give it another title, I might call it Terminator 5, Bambi's Revenge. And let me tell you why. So this is the story of four Blackfeet Indians. And they are haunted by an incident in their past when they were... So this is set... in the present, but we have flashbacks to 10 years prior. So 10 years prior, these Blackfeet Indians were hunting on land reserved for the elders. And this was on a Thanksgiving day. They just went crazy. They killed a bunch of elk, just massacred all these elk. Now, it's 10 years later, and these four Blackfeet Indians are starting to have visions. And bad shit starts happening to them one by one.
Hmm.
This book is a complete immersive experience. This is a vengeful, wrathful spirit that is unleashed in this book. It knows what it wants. It will stop at nothing to get there. Although, if you're real nice to this spirit, it turns out some gamesmanship might be allowed. There's a fantastic character named Denora. She's a high school age girl who is a basketball star. She's the daughter of one of the four Blackfeet Indians. And there's a lot of talk of basketball here, a lot of basketball metaphors that I just loved. As, you know, basketball fans, you know, go Nuggets. I wonder if he's a Nuggets fan. Perhaps he is a Miami Heat fan. Who knows?
Is he, where's he from? Do you know?
I do not know.
Oh, okay.
As a resident, I think, though, once you move to Colorado, you have to root for all Colorado teams.
Absolutely.
Because Andrew's got his Ravens shirt on and Baltimore Ravens hat on. Anyway, I'm not going to give away. So these four Indians, you know, this spirit starts coming after them. I don't want to give away a lot of what happens. Just know that this is a testament to good storytelling on many different levels. It's about honoring traditions. And most importantly, if you want to be a good basketball player, well, you made a joke before, an old joke, Andrew. Do you know the old joke about Carnegie Hall? How do you get to Carnegie Hall?
You walk or something like that.
No. Laura, do you know how to get to Carnegie Hall?
I have no idea.
Oh.
We talking about practice.
Thank you.
Oh. Not a game.
Allen Iverson.
Not the game.
Former
that
Denver Nugget himself.
Go out there and die
practice.
For.
That's how you
play
get
every game like it's my last. Not
that's,
the game.
That's how you get to
We're talking about okay. practice.
Practice,
man.
Yep.
I mean, how silly is that, man? We're talking about practice.
Allen, that's not.
I know, I suppose.
Practice is important.
But we talking about practice, man. What are we talking about?
Oh, we're talking about
practice.
Yes, practice.
We're talking about practice,
Allen,
man.
We're talking about practice.
We're talking about practice.
Oh, I thought you were playing it over and over again.
No,
is
no.
Is he we're just repeating it?
Yes. You never heard
we're
this before?
We're talking about practice,
of course,
man.
I haven't, Dave.
When you
Andrew,
come to
you heard
arena,
this? No.
No,
and
you no, one, me no one but you has heard you this.
I mean, I'm not really a sports
you
see me guy.
We're not. Andrew and I aren't out there listening to sports 24/7.
We're talking about practice right now. We're talking about practice.
You mean, I thought you were just hitting the button.
It's funny to me, too.
Nope.
I mean, it's strange.
That was Allen Iverson at a, well, you heard him. He was talking about practice.
I gotcha.
So,
but we're talking about practice.
That's right,
man.
All right, I'm good on that.
Practice.
I think I'm good there.
So, you want to be good at basketball, don't listen to Allen Iverson, you know, practice. Anyway, check this book out. It's really, really good. It's called The Only Good Indians. This is by Stephen Graham Jones. This is unsettling horror that will under your skin.
Is it something that stalks kids, or can you not tell me too much about it?
Well, they're now grown up. These are the Blackfeet Indians are grown.
Okay.
You know, and this is something that happened to them 10 years ago. It's coming after them. It's a spirit that's coming after
them.
It's
a spirit. Okay. Yes. A vengeful spirit.
A vengeful spirit. Stephen Graham Jones does a lot of interesting things in this book. At one point, he starts writing in second person, and we get to become the vengeful spirit.
Oh, that's cool.
Really, really interesting stuff.
Is there, ties into Native mythology and stuff like that?
Or? Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. That's there. It's just a straight up good old fashioned horror story.
Okay.
That is my book, Andrew.
Andrew Dowd.
What you got?
So Laura, I'd like for you to Google the title of this book.
Oh, dear.
Andrew's always putting you to work.
And then look at images for the book cover. Now, there's different versions of this book cover. Now, I should have known that I was, based on the title of the book and based on the cover of the book, what I was in for. But this is not my typical genre.
Well, happy, happy sex time?
What is it? So the book is called Dragon Actually.
Hmm.
It is part of the Dragon Kin series by G.A. Aiken, A-I-K-E-N.
Oh, Andrew. Andrew.
What's the name of it? I gotta look it up.
Andrew. I am looking at...
Andrew, whoa.
Like Fabio, basically.
Well, Fabio's chest, anyway, actually, it's oiled up, it looks lubed, he's sweaty.
It's, what's his name? It's Aquaman.
Oh,
it is. That's Aquaman.
That's the guy posing for the cover of that book?
I believe so.
It looks like it. No, he would. Why would it be, unless they made it into a movie with him?
No, I was
thinking... Yes, Dragon Actually... and it's got this guy.
Are they making a movie?
I forgot his name.
What's his name?
We're stopped. We're completely stopped.
Yeah.
I forgot the guy's name.
So I was thinking about
I'll click on this.
I was thinking about
the show has reached a new low.
Mm-hmm. My St. Mary's County Amish farmer.
That's right.
With no
did
shirt.
Did you read a romance novel, Andrew?
I must have missed that part of it.
Now, Andrew, known for his sci-fi fantasy books, has read a straight-up fantasy.
The book had great reviews, and I was looking to read something different, and indeed, that is what I got.
This is a book where women have posted pictures of men that they would like to be the male character. Yeah.
Wow!
Mm-hmm.
Andrew!
That's right.
Yeah.
And so, you know...
You know what? I'm proud of you for reading a female-friendly book, then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, after reading a few
Nothing
chapters
of
this book, I nudge Katie. I'm like, hey, Katie, are you still awake?
Katie.
Let me read you this...
Let me talk to you.
Let me read you this chapter.
Well, Andrew doesn't mind reading it because he's reading it on Kindle, so no one can actually see the cover. So I would love to see you get on the subway with that book.
And the other books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Wow.
So this book,
Feel the Burn. It's Bring the Heat, Light and Fire. Wow.
Yeah.
So anyways, this
got
book
some
stars.
Hot summer reads.
Why do I feel like we're getting this April Fool's Day prank?
I think so. I think Andrew just didn't know because on Kindle, it's hard to tell sometimes.
Yeah, you don't see
the hard to tell.
Is it getting a little warm in here or is that just me?
Oh, it's getting something.
I'll aim the laptop away from you. I turned the laptop around.
Might need to top off my glass of water here.
Oh my goodness.
So this book's the heroine of this book is Anwyl. And her name is Anwyl the Bloody.
Hmm.
And so Anwyl is a she is a princess. And so she has a brother who is the king, is the ruler of this town. Now, you know, one time when she was, 10 years old or so, she woke up and her brother was trying to kill her.
Hmm.
And so the two of them had a fight and, their father found out about it and, and basically beat both of them bloody, right? Not figuratively, literally beat them both bloody.
So much blood! Mm-hmm.
So eventually, her father died and her father was abusive and her brother really just wants to see her dead. And so as soon as her father died, right, her life is basically being threatened. And so nobody likes her brother. Her brother is ruthless. He does not rule the kingdom with a light hand. And there's lots of people that would like to see him dead. So who better to lead a revolution or a revolt to overthrow her brother and that would make her the queen? And so she ends up being supported by people within their kingdom that do not like her brother. She ends up being supported from other kingdoms that don't like her brother. And so that's how she develops the name of Anwyl the Bloody, because she is tall. I believe she is dark. She is strong. She is fierce. I mean, she is one heck of a warrior. And so the book opens up where, her life is flashing in front of her eyes and she's finally cornered. She is away from her troops. She is the last person alive and she is confronted with odds where she's likely not to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And so Anwyl quickly dispatches a couple soldiers. She cuts the heads clean off of a soldiers
wow.
or a couple
oh
soldiers.
My.
Yep.
Hopefully they didn't look like Aquaman there.
They didn't describe, it's interesting how they don't describe everybody.
Jason Momoa. That's his name.
Yeah,
oh,
Jason
that's
Momoa.
A Jason
Could
Momoa.
Not remember his name.
Yep. And
also
so,
the center for the Oklahoma City Thunder.
That's right.
Yes.
So he's a good basketball player too.
And so... She thinks she's done, but she's basically, and she's not afraid of her end. She's gone down in a blaze of glory. But then just as... go ahead, Dave, you have a question?
I do have audio of the brother talking about her.
Bitch!
Yeah, that was what he had to say about,
bitch!
Yep.
about her.
What is that from?
Bitch!
Arrested Development.
Yeah. And so...
Bitch!
Okay.
So so she thinks she's just about done. Well, then all of a sudden... She sees fear in the eyes of the soldiers, the remaining soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it turns out there's the dragon. And so a dragon shows up
here
just
the
in
dragon.
The nick of time.
Oh, yes. I see.
And the dragon is Fyrgus the Destroyer.
Fyrgus! Aye!
And so he is a century-old dragon. And people have not seen the dragons in decades.
Mm.
But here is Fyrgus. She just happens to have wound up in front of the cave of Fergus the Dragon. Huh. And he hears...
Yeah. The dragon music.
And so Fergus hears this battle outside, and he decides that he is going to go and investigate what's going on and maybe get a tasty morsel out of it. And so he shows up in the nick of time and roasts those guys alive. And so the dragon answer is like, well, why aren't you afraid? He's like, most people are afraid of me because of the dragon fear. And if you remember the books, Stavin, the dragon slayer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And so he also talks about the dragon fear. And she's like, well, one, you know, I've already assumed that I'm dead. So why should I be afraid of you if I've already accepted my death? Mm. And so he is.
Yeah. I just reminded me because of COVID. And you know how, I mean, I'm not the age group, whatever, the demo, but you still have like a fear of like, well, what if I get it? And I'm one of those people that it affects greatly, like my voice right now is.
Right.
And so I had that fever on Andrew's surprise party. And I literally was like, well, this is how I'm going to die.
Right.
I've got it. I've got the COVID and this is it. This is it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I understand that. You accept it. And I've accepted it.
Would you rather go by COVID or would you like to be roasted alive by a dragon?
Oh, COVID. COVID.
Yeah.
I do not want to be roasted alive by a dragon.
And so in any case, she is wounded. She is probably going to die anyway. Mm. And so the dragon takes her in. And then there's also a witch, and the witch uses magic and nurses her slowly back to health. Hmm. And so, you know, a relationship ends up developing between Anwyl and Fergus, right? Hmm. And he respects her, and she is not afraid of him. Like, she's grabbed his tail and smacked his tail when she felt that, you know, he may have done something ungentlemanly or undragonly. You know, I could say undragonly, sure. But how is a dragon supposed to behave?
Impolite, right?
Yeah,
sure.
Impolite, yeah. And so, you know, so she basically has no problem, you know, disciplining him when she thinks she might have been slighted. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he admires the spirit in her. And so once in her life where she is not safe with her family, she feels finally that she is safe with Fergus, right? And so, of course, the two of them develop a bond, and I won't...
Just waiting for where the hunky man comes
I won't go too much into that. And so, you know, there is thrusting in this book. There is there is attacking. There is attacking from behind. Oh, God. There are stiff chefs in this book.
Listener, when you knew it was Andrew's turn, you did not expect this.
No.
Now let me talk about swordplay.
Okay.
So, but there are, you know, there's relationships in the book. There are steamy scenes in this book where you kind of want to nudge.
I mean, there better be with a cover like
with
that,
with a cover
right?
like
and,
that.
You know, you want to nudge your significant other and share the steamy details of some of these chapters.
Catching my wife trying on my jeans.
Uh-huh. And, you know, and of course there's, you know, she gets nursed back to health. And then she is out for retribution.
Oh, so you're saying there's nurses.
male nurses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so this is a great book. It's got great it has great reviews. Mm-hmm. And I can see that. And, you know, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the I want to say the walk down.
I can't believe you're reading. It's just, it does not. I'm just shocked. It doesn't seem. I'm not saying it's not. I'm sure it's a great book. I'm surprised that you.
I think it's pretty awesome.
Out of all the books you bring in here,
I think it's pretty awesome.
I do too. I do. I'm just funny. It just has me speechless.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been looking to read a different types of books.
And you
break
have
out
done
of
it.
You know because so much of the science fiction and fantasy is so formulaic.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's nice to read something a little different. And yes, indeed, this was
different.
This was, I guess you might say, very titillating.
Oh, steamed up his glasses.
Very nice. And that book, heartily recommended. Two thumbs up, way up by
Andrew Dowd.
And the book is Dragon Actually by G.A. Aiken.
Thank you. All right. Time for the
audiobook.
So I did not quite get as excited as Andrew did when I read this book, although this certainly is, or listened to this book, though this certainly is an excellent book. This is by an excellent author, David Morrell. And the name of the book is Creepers. And this is narrated by Patrick G. Lawler. Now, listen. If you're out there and you've ever been inside a building when no one else is around, I know I've been in many schools late at night. Certainly,
Andrew just was in his.
That's true. Yeah,
in your place,
walking around
down.
By yourself in an empty office building. You know, there's a certain kind of feeling you get when you're walking around. You get kind of, I don't know if you're anything like me, but it's a little. Some people get a little creepy. Some people get a little excited. Like they're like, hey, let me explore.
And I've been in buildings before where I could swear to you, they just didn't feel normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, houses and things where something was just off.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Every building has its own character, especially buildings that have been around
energy
a long time. Yeah, their own energy. I was going to say, I've been at building schools late at night, certainly never early in the morning, as I am not want to be the first one to. God forbid I'd be the first one to. I'm not a Tom Lee. It's not, shout out to Tom Lee.
My dad.
Who's always the first one to arrive.
My dad arrives with the janitor. Sometimes he's waiting for the janitor to let him in. Custodian to let him in.
First one to arrive, first one to leave.
That's right.
Tom Lee.
Yeah.
When you're the theater teacher, you find yourself doing performances late at night after school.
I have a dad story.
Oh, yes.
And this one's kind of funny.
Okay.
So he taught in, I believe it was East Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In the
tough part of Baltimore.
Terrible part of Baltimore. In the late 80s when, basically when The Wire was set.
Right.
If
anybody's seen The Wire, that's where Tom was teaching.
And he taught. So he got there.
He was Presbyluski before.
He was Presbo.
Yes.
So he would get there really early in the morning and the janitor would let him in. Mm-hmm. He got there so early that he crossed over with nighttime folks in Baltimore.
Wow.
So.
Oh, no.
He had an interaction, which he didn't realize it at first, but he realized it very quickly.
Yeah.
With a woman on her way out from the night. So a lady of the night, a prostitute, a Baltimore hooker.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Who was probably like, I could turn one more trick before I hit the bed for the day. Yeah.
So you got propositioned?
Propositioned. Yeah. Mm-hmm. First thing in the morning in Baltimore.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's how early he would get there.
Yeah,
and then B, how awful, truly awful that school neighborhood was.
Yeah, that's rough. Well, maybe Tom would like this book because it sounds like, not that it's certainly
if
not about
prostitutes. If my dad has made it this far into the podcast.
That's true. if you've ever wondered, or maybe just wondered, what it would be like to sneak around inside a building when no one else is around, then this book is right up your alley. So the word creepers, and that's the name of the book, Creepers, is also another word for urban explorers. And in this book, these explorers are going through an old abandoned hotel that is marked for destruction. But that's not all that's marked for destruction. Also, their lives might be marked for destruction. I bet you didn't know, but there are rival gangs of urban explorers out there. So you always have to be careful when you're creeping around an old building. This book is just, it's just a lot of fun, you know.
I've read this book. This is a really good book.
This is a good book. There are murderers around. There could be serial killers, bombs, rats.
People who get off.
Yes.
Walking into old abandoned buildings and creeping around at night.
Yes. And this is just a fantastic example of that. The nonstop action and adventure, pure excitement, just pure fun. Let's give a listen to a clip. This is Creepers by David Morrell, narrated by Patrick G. Lawler.
1 year later, he became a creeper. It's after 9. We began to wonder if you were coming. The professor's gray hair matched his beard. His glasses were small, his cheeks heavy. After a careful look outside, he shut and locked the door. I missed the earlier train from New York. Sorry to hold you up. Quite all right. Vinny was late arriving also. We're getting organized. The professor, who looked out of place in jeans, a sweater, and a windbreaker, indicated a thin man of 24, who also wore jeans, a sweater, and a windbreaker. as did the two other young people in the room, as did Ballinger, who'd followed the instructions he was given, including the directive to make certain the clothes were dark. Vincent Vanelli, B.A. in History, State University at Buffalo, 2002, high school teacher in Syracuse, New York, unmarried, mother deceased, father unable to work, suffering from smokers-related emphysema.
All right, there you go. That is Creepers, and that is your...
Audiobook of the Week!
Audiobook of the Week. Check it out. Guaranteed, I'm going to give it... Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't given the inside flap. We haven't...
The inside flap.
Money back guarantee. This is... I'm giving it there right now.
We're still not.
I'm
going
to give it right now here on the air. If you listen to this book and don't enjoy it, that's on you. Okay, so everybody's got different tastes. I can certainly hardly recommend it, and Laura loved it as well. That's our show for this week. Thank you so much to Sherry LaPenna for joining us. Check out her book, The End of Her. We'll be back in a few days with an Inside Chat episode. My name is Dave Medicus. Thanks for joining us.
Adios.
Life is too short, so kiss slowly, laugh insanely, love truly, and live with passion. Andy Voigt.
Looks are important to me.